Good morning. You are watching The Program with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It's Friday, April 10th. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for liking, watching, and sharing the show. Like it also if you feel so motivated. Good morning, Jamarl.
What's happening, my man? How you doing, Ted?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. It's going to be really warm today. It's going to be like 71 here, which is weird because it was like 22 2 days ago, but whatever.
Really?
Climate change. They call it global weirding, which I thought was a good description of it. Today, we're going to be talking about this move on the part of the Trump counterterrorism director of the National Security Council to target people, Jamarl, like us, for possible arrest, which isn't good. I don't like it at all. Inexplicably, out of clear blue sky, Melania Trump suddenly saying that she didn't know Jeffrey Epstein, never went to Jeffrey Epstein's private island, was not introduced to her husband by Jeffrey Epstein, never knew no Jeffrey Epstein, no how, no way. But I don't even know why she brought this up, and nobody else seems to know. Donald Trump is, of course, blustering, because that's what Donald Trump does, ahead of ceasefire and peace negotiations this weekend in Islamabad. J.D. Vance will represent the United States and head the delegation. And also a subject of great interest to me, because I use it, Signal, which is an app that's been marketed by people like Edward Snowden and other people as being a private point-to-point encrypted communication. Turns out the FBI has figured out a back channel. The good news is we can tell you how to avoid that back way to access your so-called deleted chats. So with all that, and it's actually kind of incredibly simple once you think about it, but you have to sort of think about it. So if you have a question during the live performance here on Deep Program, which is 9 a.m. Monday through Friday Eastern time here in the United States, please put it in the chat on Rumble or YouTube, and we will get to it. Priority will necessarily go to the paid super chats, but we do try to get to the other ones as well. We are doing Q&A's shows, but not today. Those are Mondays and Wednesdays only at 12 noon. On Friday, the Lord rests, not to mention I have a Rumble exclusive to do with Robbie. I don't even remember what we're talking about, but Robbie, I'm sure, will remind me, or we'll just like figure something out. Okay, so let's talk about leftists, shall we?
Wait, what time are you guys doing the exclusive?
I think we're doing it. Robbie, are we doing that live or are we just recording that?
No, we do it live. We got to stream it. Listen, you're a Rumble partner, Ted. You got to get those sweet, sweet hours so we get your sweet, sweet lucre.
What the fuck are we talking about? I don't remember.
I don't know. We'll figure something out. All right. Here's the problem. Me and Ted politically are on opposite ends of the poll. But we agree on a crap ton of stuff because we're both populists. Well, I'm a populist. Yeah. He's a communist. I don't really know where the overlap and how the bleed works. But
there's a left-wing strain in populism. Call your office.
Being a patriot. Honest, like, no bullshit. Like, what? Like, have you seen Trump's tweet today? I'm sorry, it's a detour, but just give me one. Donald Trump flipped out today. I don't know if you saw him going after Tucker Carlson, making Kelly. He put like a page, flip it out.
Yeah,
the president is losing his mind.
He is losing his mind. You can call Tucker Carlson a lot of things, but stupid is really not one of them.
Stupid is not the thing. And then he's like, nobody's interested in these people, and yet the president of the United States is literally
talking
about him, right?
That's what I always say to people who are like, nobody cares about you. I'm like, and yet here you are.
And yet here you are talking about me, the president of the United States, right? I think the wild part is those people, while we may disagree on a shitload of stuff, there is something to be said about being in the interest of America as opposed to working at the behest of a foreign power. And so if we agree that, hey, American interests should matter more, then yeah, we will have overlap, even if you're on the right or on the left. I don't think that's a shocking thing. To say that, hey, maybe we need to deal with the affairs of America as opposed to the affairs of other countries.
But you'd be surprised, JT, how many people, for them, it breaks their brain. Like, legitimately just shorts them out. Like, last night I was talking to my pastor over on on Facebook, because I reposted Tucker Carlson. I like Tucker. I agree with him. I think he is a patriot. And so he then responded to some BS post on Facebook from some guy with no links, no sources, no nothing. And he talks about, well, Tucker Carlson's misrepresenting the Bible. I was like, well, here's the problem, is that the post that you shared doesn't share anything. Like, there's nothing sourced. There's no link to the episode. There's no timestamp. There is no nothing. And so, right. Trust me, bro. I said, that's not how this works. I said, the only thing you take at face value is the Bible if you're a Christian. That's it. Everything else, you better source it. And that's, and it's just a disconnect. And it's just like, well, Robbie, have you gone leftist? I said, well, I guess so. If you think that only Congress could declare war, and if you believe in separation of powers, and if you believe that a president's not a king, then sure, I guess so.
But yeah, I never thought of the, even as the leftiest person here, probably, I've never thought that those were exclusive purviews of the left, you know, at all.
Right.
Yeah, John Adams was a right winger. He didn't believe in kings. All right, we've got news to do here.
Yeah,
okay, so
thanks, Robbie.
Thanks, Robbie. Indeed. So, Sebastian Gorka is the senior counterterrorism director on Trump's National Security Council. He is involved in a really unusual secret scheme being reported exclusively by the New York Times this morning to designate leftist groups in Europe as official State Department designated terrorist organizations. These are basically a total of five very obscure, very small organizations in Greece, Germany, and Italy. And basically, his quote is, there are no lone wolves. Well, I mean, that's not true. And he says that he wants those countries to investigate these groups, none of which, by the way, in Europe, have attacked anyone for at least 10 years, which is supposed to be the official terrorist designation. You have to have done violence in the last 10 years. But anyway, they want to be investigated, and they're looking for any connections or communications between members of those organizations with leftists in the United States, which they then, which Gorka then wants to surveil, investigate, and imprison any of those people. This is all an attempt to basically tie them to quote unquote Antifa, which, you know, kind of doesn't exist as an organization. It's an idea. Yeah. So I think this is very McCarthyist. They're looking for leftists like us in the United States to throw us in prison. And they're going to do it on the flimsiest of excuses. It's like, well, there's a link between, like, Ted Rall once exchanged emails and book recommendations with some dude who used to belong to an Italian anarchist group, which one time 27 years ago did something wrong. Therefore, Ted Rall has to go to Guantanamo and be hanging from the ceiling with a ball gag in his mouth. I mean, that's basically what they're on about.
Yeah, that's outrageous. I mean, like, in the irony of a country that just started a war with aggression saying, we need to go after terrorists, and terrorists that don't actually exist in this case. And then there's the question of, like, you have nothing else to do? Like, this is what you decided to use your time for? Yeah, it's outrageous. I mean, let's be honest, right? This is just political machinations. This is political expedience.
It's a fucking fishing expedition while there's real crime that they and real terrorists that they could actually be pursuing, and they're not.
Yes. Well, the real terrorists we worked with, that bloke came to the U.S. and shook Trump's hand, and then went back to Syria with Trump's blessing, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is outrageous. I mean, this is one of those situations where, yeah, he's looking at going after, let's say, domestic enemies or trying to create domestic enemies. It puts me in the mind almost of the Saddam Hussein thing, where it's like we're looking for weapons of mass destruction and we're looking for terrorists who operated on 9/11, something where the link didn't actually exist, but you're doing this kind of fishing expedition to try to pull people out and try to say, hey, see, we showed you and we said that there was a link and here's this link. Yeah, I don't buy it. And honestly, this even goes back to January 6th, right? Because the argument that Donald Trump was making was that, yeah, those were Antifa. Those weren't my supporters that were beating the hell out of cops.
Ridiculous.
That was Antifa that was doing it. And there's Antifa all around. And everything that takes place, Antifa is doing this, Antifa is doing that. And every protest against me is Antifa. And I, Donald Trump, am going to find a link to Antifa to show that this thing exists. No, that's disturbing.
political violence in this country is usually, if it's right or left, it's usually right wing. And that's been the case historically for a long time. You know, I say before we move on here and take a few questions, my first response, Jamal, was like, oh, wait, there's a militant left-wing organization in the United States. I've been looking for one for my entire life to join. If you know, do I need a subscription card? Like, where can I sign up? Because I've never been able to find one. Right. I mean, I live in a country where we have a bunch of no kings is what, you know, like, well, are regularly scheduled every 17th Saturday, weather allowing, is like, that's what passes for the left in this country, is a bunch of fucking corporate DNC Democrats. I would love to join a real left-wing organization. There isn't one.
Not one that's effective. And let's be honest, as you point out, No Kings is a Democrat-linked organization. There's a difference between the Democratic Party and what I think you and I call the left. Those are different things. I don't think Trump knows the difference. But either way, he is going to be looking for people in order to have, I suppose, show trials. That's assuming he brings anybody to trial. I will make a bet. I don't think he gets anybody legit.
No.
Because I don't think anybody legit exists.
I agree with that. Yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see. We will see. I mean, what a fucking joke. Except for the fact that, you know, these jokes will sweep up real ordinary Americans for no good reason. And here's the worst part. The liberals, the Democrats, the corporatists, they will not only not give a shit, they'll help report us.
Well, it depends on who he gets. If he gets a liberal, then he's called it Antifa. But I got to be honest with you. I think that they are so incompetent and ineffective that this may go nowhere. But I could be wrong. I hope I'm right.
I think it's another brick in the wall of the fascist construct that this administration is either kind of floating to see if they can get away with, or they're actually putting together. And I don't know which it is. Manchild, thanks for the dollar donation. Morning, y'all. Morning to you as well. Is Gorka trying to create European terror labels as a legal blueprint to criminalize the American left? Yes. And import Orban's managed democracy model to rig the 2026 midterms. Viktor Orban, of course, in Hungary is in a lot of trouble. We should probably talk about that too. But I think.
By the way, Charlie Kirk is the other part to this.
St. Charles, the first of the United States. Yeah. He of the statues. He of the sainted widow. Who is not a gross skank at all. Not
according to Trump. It was Antifa or something like that that was also involved in pushing the public to murder Charlie Kirk. Like, this is the stuff that they were effectively using. They were using Charlie Kirk as a gateway in order to go with legislation to go after the left. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could hear it like immediately before his body hit the ground, before his body was cold. They were out there screaming that it's obviously the left. That's
the left did this. You still see this on social media every single day. You, the left, did this. A dude did this because he thought in a misguided way that he was defending his trans girlfriend, right? Basically, that's it. And roommate. Does that make him a liberal or a lefty? Possibly. It's one person. There are no lone wolves. No, there's a lone wolf. That right there is a lone wolf. He did not. He had no co-conspirators. He did it all by himself. He was from a Trumpy right-wing family, if that matters. I don't think that matters either. This was his misguided idea to stand up for trans rights and specifically the insult that he saw perceived, directed at his girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the other part to this. I mean, ever since his death, they've been using that as this kind of litmus or lightning rod of organization against leftists.
He's their Horst Wiesel.
Yeah.
You know, for people who don't know who that is, right? So Horst Wiesel was a young Nazi in the 1920s who was killed in a scrap with leftists in the streets of Germany, where they actually had real leftists. And anyway, so the Nazi movement had the famous Horst Wiesel song, and it was like he was the martyr of the Nazi movement. Emily, thanks for the comment. The major difference between the right and the left is that the right does not believe in humanism. Please stop perpetuating the myth of us agreeing. Well, there can be some agreement, but I take your point. Skylaski, hi guys. Can we mention that the U.S. has labeled all transgender Americans as terrorist groups and the biggest threat to the country per the FBI? This is related to that. Please talk about it. I'm not familiar. Are you?
They label all trans groups as what?
Yeah, I need a quote or a citation or something. If so, of course, obviously that would be disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mabe Bluth Funk. Not sure if you guys covered NSPM 7 or the executive orders on this a while back. They issued some ban on the John Brown Gun Club a few months ago.
How could they issue a ban on the gun club?
I don't know. Again, okay, sorry. We need citations. Longtime listener, Ted, joined the American Communist Party. I've looked at their stuff. They're very, very tiny, very, very small, and I have some ideological disagreements with them, but I'm not against it. Nerfentahu, thank you very much for the $5. Why is the government cool with H-1B Indians who are not qualified for what they're hired to do, speaking from experience, but not hard labor immigrants who are actually helpful?
That's obvious.
That's a good question. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, because Donald Trump's in with tech bros. Mm-hmm. Like, if you think about it, this predates
Donald Trump, this phenomenon.
It does. But this was one of the big fights when Trump came in office, because Trump kept saying, I'm MAGA first, I'm America first, I'm et cetera, et cetera. And then when the H-1B1 visa thing came up, if you remember, Ramaswamy and Elon Musk broke with a lot of MAGA on this particular issue, because their thing was like, how are you American first, but you're not hiring American workers to do these particular jobs? You're bringing in effectively indentured servants in order to work at these companies, because those people have less power, make less, et cetera, than Americans. And then they'll turn around and say, we're going to destroy the Department of Education, while simultaneously claiming that they're going to bring in H-1B1 visas. So the pathway in order to get people sufficiently educated to do particular jobs, you are destroying, while simultaneously saying we're going to bring in cheap labor from a standpoint of tech and use that in lieu of American workers. It's that. It's almost like they have somewhat of a bias towards immigrating people from, let's say, like certain countries, and are okay with immigrating people from other countries, especially for jobs that are highly skilled. It's weird. Or it's not weird. Obviously, they're bought. But it's still disturbing.
I guess this comes down to the question of, it's really about the employers, right? So as you point out correctly, big tech is wired into both the Democratic and the Republican Party leaderships at the highest levels. So it's easy for Jeff Bezos to pick up the phone and say, and beg for H-1B visas from Trump or Biden or whoever get those. But I guess, we know that working class migrant laborers are employed by American employers like Tyson Chicken, Tyson Foods in Arkansas.
Farms.
Yeah, right. Lots of farms. But is it as simple as the fact that they're more atomized? And like, so for example, this farmer isn't united with that farmer. There isn't like united ag business that can call up the White House and get this stuff, or that companies like Tyson are just not, for whatever reason, wired into the White House as much. I mean, it's a little hard to explain.
I guess that's true. Maybe you're right. I remember this fight taking place, and I remember the H-1B. And maybe it's just Donald Trump has made this big pitch about immigration, and oftentimes the focus of that immigration is
Maybe also in a country that whose average educational attainment level keeps declining over the years, it's maybe an easier political sell to the American people. I know lots of liberals who are like, well, there's lots of jobs that, Americans can't or aren't willing to do. And like, the best scientists come from other countries. So why wouldn't we hire them? And it sort of makes sense to them. Obviously you see unemployed people all over the country who could pick potatoes or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just assume, and maybe my assumption was wrong, that it is, as you point out, an easier sell. Like, it's very weird, though, to make this argument. And I thought it was weird when Elon Musk and these guys were making the argument at first that, well, Americans aren't competent enough to do these jobs. And you're like, really? That's your argument, foreigner?
Yeah, well, it's such a pile of shit. And yeah. it's like, okay, if only there was an institution that we would call this institution a school
right.
that could train people to do
right.
perform jobs of various kinds.
Right.
Yes. If only there was an institution, we would call this institution a company that could train people that it wanted to have perform a job. I mean, nobody wants to train anyone anymore. You know, I mean, the last time I held a job where I was trained for it was in the 80s. Back then, it was kind of like, we hire someone who's reasonably intelligent, or we get Ted because we have to settle right. for him. And then we train him to do the job. You know,
see, technical jobs are a little bit different. Like, I was a software engineer for 10 years. Mm. Technical jobs are complicated because it's like
you have to know a programming language. You have to have experience with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm going to walk myself.
But I've been pushing through with all the disruption that we're constantly seeing in our workforce and what, you know, the big mismatch between what work employers say that they need and what's available in the workplace. It seems to me like this country desperately needs a taxpayer funded, system to allow people to get job retraining and go to school and learn programming language or whatever the fuck it is. Now it's not really coding anymore because AI is really disrupting that. But, you got to like send people to school for free, have that paid for by the taxpayers.
Well, that's why I always say free college. It's like you are in a global economy. Mm-hmm. You're competing against other nations with free college, right?
Thank you.
Like if you create a disincentive for people to go to college, what are you going to get? And I guess from there,
it's $100,000 a fucking year in this country.
It's insane. And so it's like, okay, so you are hobbling your country for this because it's almost like they take this argument, right? That, well, college is for the individual. Yeah, nay. It's for the individual, but a country is made up of individuals. And so it's like, if you want your country to be able to compete with other countries, especially in the context of a global economy, and especially in the context of other countries that offer college for free because they get the value of that college for their particular country, then you need to do something similar.
I mean, everything in this country is about the individual, right? Like, if you get sick, JT, that's on you. I thought we learned during the pandemic, well, if I get sick and I don't go to the doctor and then I spread contagion throughout my community and people start dropping like flies, that's not just on me, is it? But but we still have this ridiculous, we need a more communitarian approach here. But anyway, I did like that question. JT, exactly what you're saying is in this executive order, which is called Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence. So you can look in the chat and see that. I'm going to look at that afterward, not on the air, because it'd be pretty boring to listen to me, watch me read this. Question for Ted and JT. In the current state of the world, how would you invest your money if I had money? Or would you
currently? What a hell of an assumption, right? What a hell of an assumption.
Yeah, no, I mean, or would you currently not invest given the unpredictability? Thanks, Jen.
Invest in gold.
I used to work on Wall Street. I worked at Bear Stearns. I've been.
Yes, you did. I forgot about that.
And
yes,
so
you
did. I do follow the markets and everything. And the fact is, there's always an opportunity, and unpredictability creates more volatility, which means you can make your profits or suffer your losses more quickly. These days, God, what would I mean, it's hard to go wrong with AI, I would say right now.
I think that's going to bust.
Yeah, sure. But you can make money until it does.
In the meantime, yeah.
Yeah. And I also do think I do hate how high precious metals are because they're at a record high. On the other hand, I know what I do. Energy stocks right now. ExxonMobil, BP. Yeah, et cetera.
I think I would have shorted the shit out of oil over the last couple of days, but yeah.
Come on. Look, oil's going to $200 a barrel. I mean,
not oil. I'm sorry, not oil. Oh, what was the fuck it was? It was something related to... No, I inverted that. Oil is going to go high, especially if this war continues. We're at $4.20 here in Richmond. It's not oil. It's something else. It's something related to the war effort, though. But either way, agreed. Agreed. But gold is what, like 4,000, if not more?
Thanks, Waterways, for the $2. Yeah, it is. And silver is crazy. Yeah. $2 donation. Thanks very much. White House, September 25th last year. NS National Security Presidential Memo, Section 7.3. The AG may recommend that any group or entity whose members are engaged in activities meeting the definition of quote-unquote domestic terrorism. So, you know.
That's the buzzword.
Bullshit.
That's the buzzword.
Yeah,
totally. You're a terrorist.
Yeah, it's always been that word. It's been like that for, you know, even long before 9/11. This is kind of like I feel like this is a good segue to talk about the negotiations coming up in Islamabad over the weekend.
Are we sure that those are going to go on? I've seen conflicting reports all morning, and because some people said, "Well, the plane is in the air." Other people said, "Any idea of talks." Are BS, meaning the talks or the people haven't necessarily, or the delegation hasn't necessarily landed in Islamabad. But the reports are conflicting. I don't know which one's true.
No, we don't know. So basically they were scheduled, right?
Right.
And basically the plan is for the Pakistanis to host, and the Americans are sending J.D. Vance, Steve Witkoff, who's always been Trump's envoy. He was involved in the Ukraine negotiations, and Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, of course, and the great peacemaker of the Middle East. I guess now he could finally achieve that, potentially. And the foreign minister from Iran, who, if I were him, I'd be like, hey, can I Zoom in? Because what with the Israelis and everything, I'll just make this a Zoom call. But I guess, so that's the plan. It's supposed to happen tomorrow. I mean, I think the Americans are going. The question is whether the Iranians are going to show up.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that I would, honestly.
I don't think they should.
I would ghost those guys. The only thing that I would like, I mean, so we had Tweetgate yesterday that we talked about. We know that the Pakistanis, so basically the Iranians know that the Pakistanis have been conspiring with the Trump administration to pretend to be honest brokers, but really are kind of doing Trump's bidding to try to, basically, Trump's scared to death, and he knows that he's lost the war, and he wants to try to save face as much as possible. Well, that's over. The Iranians know that they always knew they had the upper hand. Now they know they have the upper hand. Yeah. But if I'm the Iranians, there is one thing I really like about this. J.D. Vance. The fact is, you and I both know from the reporting that came out of the Maggie Haberman piece in the Times that J.D. Vance was the number one most strident voice within the administration against going to war with Israel against Iran.
Yes.
He is the biggest war skeptic here, and he's leading the delegation from the United States. That sends a strong signal to Iran that we're serious about trying to make nice and make peace, I would say.
Yeah, agreed. And to be clear, CBS reported that Trump knew about Lebanon being included in the deal. In fact, there are a few things with this. Mm-hmm. A, Trump knew of Lebanon being part of the deal. B, CBS was reporting that Netanyahu contacted Trump. And after that phone call, Trump comes up and says, well, Lebanon is not included in the deal, obviously. Okay, that may or may not be true. Oftentimes we get lies from the media on the relationship between Trump and Netanyahu as if there's some kind of division there, when oftentimes there's no division. Israel's just used as a scapegoat for it. Mm-hmm. We also found out, or we had news from the Supreme Leader, because one of the questions that I had was whether or not Iran was going to consider Lebanon inextricably linked to any deal that they effectively come up with. The Supreme Leader saying yes, that this idea that Lebanon is not included is nonsense. We are linked in this. We're part of a resistance front, and we are negotiating in this case, meaning the United States seemed to have made the bet that Iran would toss Lebanon over the edge in order to get a deal. Iran is saying that is not the case, hence reclosing the Strait of Hormuz. They haven't necessarily reopened attacks on Israel yet, but closing the Strait of Hormuz is a superpower in some sense. And it gets to your point of, having, let's say, the whip hand in this, because mm-hmm. fact of the matter is they can close it, we can't open it, and they can destroy the global economy by doing so. So it's fascinating. And then this question of whether they're going to show up. If they ghost the U.S. delegation,
that would be my move.
Talk about power play.
Passive aggressiveness is really one of my specialties for people who know me.
Show would be at the negotiations. It's like Tabral didn't show.
I mean, seriously, I think it would be hilarious to be like, you know, we were going to go, and then we realized we can't trust the Israelis not to shoot our plane out of the sky, so we can't go. Sorry.
Yeah, we can't make it.
Yeah. Can't make it. Oh, and our electricity is kind of not that reliable, what with, you know, you guys bombing us. So not really sure we can do the Zoom call. But you guys enjoy. Have some good kebabs. Let us know how it is.
You can come to Tehran.
I mean, you're like, or the Iranians might be like, you know, a free trip to Pakistan. You know, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah,
whatever.
I'll be straight. Be like, look, man, you're continuing to bomb Lebanon. We told you this is fine. Because look, for my thing,
the U.S. did agree not to
yes,
do that. Yeah.
This is a test. And it's a test for Iran. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, are you going to go to negotiate while they're violating the ceasefire that you just put into place?
Well, and meanwhile, Trump's flipping the script, as he often does. And he's like, you know, you'd better reopen the Strait of Hormuz, like, as we agreed, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, this bluster, I mean, come on, if you're the Iranians, the whole world just laughing at Trump now.
Yes. Because
he's been exposed.
Yeah, I'm going to end the world, or I'm going to end civilization. And then
you're not simultaneously, gonna do anything.
Hey, man, please get them to accept this deal. Oh, by the way, one of the other interesting points, the IRGC apparently wasn't on board for this. So Araghchi, or the reporting comes out that it was the reformist government that wanted to open the strait and resume negotiations. Mm-hmm. The IRGC said no, or at the very least, they were resistant to it. And apparently, there's opposition or there's division within the IRGC on whether or not to even open the strait in the context of these negotiations. Obviously, they reclosed it. But
six ships made it through yesterday, which is a trickle. No oil tankers, but I think. No oil tankers are. I think it's more that the oil tankers don't want to make the run, right? They're scared.
They don't want to make the chance. Yeah. But it's fascinating. It seems like the IRGC is the one that's in control of closing the strait. Yeah. And the government itself is effectively having to negotiate with the IRGC to even go with these negotiations.
I mean, the thing is, though, the civilian government, like the reformist faction, as you characterize them, They're weak sisters within the Iranian government. They always have been. I mean, there are always figures, even more hardline ones like Ahmadinejad, but all those guys, they don't really have a lot of power within the government, right? I mean, the IRGC sort of like, they really run things on the ground. They're controlling the Strait of Hormuz. They control the missile batteries. I mean, they're going to decide really what happens here. And with the country at war, That goes for tenfold.
Yeah, and that's what it seems to be. The IRGC seems to have, let's say, the whip hand in this.
They do. I mean, the Iranians hold all the cards. If anything, I mean, from my view, the biggest mistake the Iranians could do would be to not allow the Trumpies and their Israeli allies a graceful exit here. I mean, because it's almost too lopsided. And that's what scares me in this whole scenario, is that Trump's going to feel trapped and stuck, not know what to do. The entire global economy hangs in the balance. It's already started to circle the drain. We can see it coming. It's moving in slow motion. It's like we're all tied to the train tracks, like, you know, like with the evil guy standing nearby, twisting his mustache. But you can see it coming, you know, from across the horizon. You know, by the middle of next month, we're going to be fucked. And Trump knows it. So what if Trump decides, like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, I have to nuke Tehran. And so the Iranians have to give something that makes Trump's going to have to say, you know, J.D. Vance behind closed doors is going to have to say, you have to give me something I can take home so that we can present domestically that we didn't get reamed here. And the question is, what will that be? Will the Iranians be willing to do that? And if so, what will it be?
See, for me, I think, look, I think this is a watershed moment. And I think from the Iran's point of view, they've been pecked at. They've been attacked. Mm-hmm. Their scientists have been murdered. They murdered Soleimani. They've right. been attacked during negotiations.
6 years ago, Soleimani. It's been a while.
It's been a while. But I guess I'm pointing out that there is...
It's been going on over years, though. I'm agreeing.
It's been going over years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even going back to Dick Cheney...
And, the sanctions.
And the sanctions. And so it's like, if you're Iran and these guys have attacked you maliciously, you need to demonstrate victory. I feel like this is what the Russians saying, right? Ukraine needs to be seen to lose and to lose monstrously. And I feel the same thing with the U.S. The U.S. needs to lose. Meaning Iran needs to maintain the integrity of Iran, and they need to show legitimate deterrence from the standpoint of Israel or the United States to not do this again in 6 months.
All right, let's go through the points of what each side has to have. I think that's really important. And then let me just ask Robbie something. Robbie, do we have an ad by any chance?
We do. I'll throw it up for you. Give me just one moment here.
Okay, cool. All right, and then we'll start that in the middle of that. So, all right, first of all, the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, ultimately Iran wants that. And, you know, and the U.S. needs it, has to have it, right? Has to. So the question is, how does that look? Chew on that. Let me read this coffee ad. Still haven't tried 1775 coffee? Now's your shot. The 1775 starter kit just dropped. Only 1,000 units. You're getting the bold dark roast that hits hard, the smooth medium roast, and the Vitality Mushroom Coffee for clean energy, laser focus, no crash, all single origin, small batch, toxin-free, and mold-free. Plus, you're also getting a gold spoon clip because freedom isn't scooped with plastic. The frother is strong enough to stir up your coffee and your mother-in-law's opinions. What about your father-in-law? And a black 1775 tumbler, $170 worth of coffee and gear. Yours is $99. This is for the ones who've been watching 1775 blow up on Rumble, wondering if it's actually worth it. Spoiler, it is. Go to 1775coffee.com/studio. Grab your starter kit before they're gone. Bold beans, clean fuel, and a morning routine that stands for something just like Rumble does. So, JT, the way I think this goes down is that the strait reopens and there's going to be tolls.
Yes. Well, they're tolls now. In fact, they've been tolls since March.
Maybe smaller tolls, but there will be tolls.
Yeah. They mean, they're saying $1 per gallon or something like that, or $1 per liter or whatever the number is.
Yeah. That's too much, really. For like an ongoing scenario, but that gives Iran something that it wants but doesn't have to have. Iran wants reparations, but if it can go to its people and say, listen, we're going to have this toll we never had before, that will pay for reparations. Right. That helps them domestically.
I think they're making that argument. If I'm not mistaken, the Supreme Leader made something similar to that argument in his speech, mm-hmm. that the toll system, like basically these are sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are sanctions.
And here's the sticky wiki for these negotiations. Iran wants a permanent solution. No more Israeli and or American strikes. They want, you know, call off your Israeli dog and you guys don't fucking, we're not going to be back at this next year. You got to stop. Right. Okay. So that sounds to me like it's at bare minimum an armistice. It might even be a peace agreement. It's a treaty obligation, right?
Right.
It is. I mean, it's not an executive order. So for the United States to give that, but Iran has to have that, right?
Well, that's what they want. They're saying I think they have to have it.
I don't think the Iranians can make any deal without that.
Right.
So here's the problem for Trump. First of all, I guess he's got it. Can he get it ratified through the United States Senate? Treaty obligation, I think, requires a 2/3 vote from the U.S. Senate. Yes. Good luck getting the U.S. Senate to agree 2/3 on anything, right?
Yep.
Except for giving themselves a raise. So, yep. Okay, but he's going to have to, I guess he can control his conference, but then, you know, Democrats be warmongers. They might not want to do it.
They're not going to do it. He's going to lose Congress. Because he's not going to get 2/3. I mean, like, even let's say for the moment, as hypothetically, mm-hmm. that Donald Trump had 65 Republicans in the Senate, 70 Republicans in the Senate. Hell, right. Let's make it 80. He still wouldn't get that pass.
You don't think?
No, I don't. Like the likes of Lindsey Graham, the likes of, you know, I'm trying to think of some of these other warmongers. Many of these people were perfectly okay with war in Iran. They were. Mm-hmm. They just didn't want to look, be humiliated.
They just didn't want to lose. Yeah.
Right. They just didn't want to lose. So it's not like, oh my God, I can't believe the president is attacking Iran. It's, oh, the president has humiliated us in attacking Iran. Those are different things, right? I think he would have a hard time getting it through, just like I think.
And of course, obviously, that's not the situation. And if this negotiation drags past November, or I should say past December 31st, you know, there might be a Democratic Senate. But I think so basically you're saying between Democratic, you know, obstructionism and warmongery and the non-MAGA Republican senators, there's no fucking way he'd be lucky to get like 30 US senators.
I don't buy he gets this through.
I agree with that. That's a
like, and by the way, fucking I don't scary. Say the same thing with the Russians, right? Because the Russians are saying the same thing. And by the way, they should say it. Like, this is not like I'm dealing
you
with
could, you could sign a treaty. However, okay, there's another way. You can sign a treaty and then you say, well, I signed the treaty. The Senate didn't ratify it. The United States has done that before.
That was with Obama, right?
Right.
With JCPOA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I tried to get the Senate to ratify. There's been various nuclear non-proliferation accords that were like that. They were kind of considered the law of the land because the president and subsequent presidents liked it and agreed with it, but it wasn't officially a treaty obligation. Right. I guess the question is, can the Iranians accept that? They might have to.
They're going to have to.
And then, okay, and then the really hard part is how can the United States make a, I mean, they have to get the Israelis to sign off on this too. Will they? Is there any condition under which Netanyahu can go back to Tel Aviv and tell the Israeli people, yeah, we will never attack Iran again unless like they attack us militarily?
But see, I mean, it depends. I mean, I think the question is, will Trump do it? I mean, obviously, the president can get it. Do you remember the Ronald Reagan? You know this, you're a student in history. Where Ronald Reagan calls Israelis, basically, you know, cut that shit out. And then when he hangs up the phone, he's like, wow, I didn't realize I had the power to do that. It's like, dude, you're supplying. You're the lifeblood.
Totally.
You know, like
$4 billion a year, all because of Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, but I guess my thing is the idea that we give them financial support, we give them billions every year, like $10, $50 billion a year. We protect them in the United Nations. We protect them against other countries that have been calling them genocidal maniacs. Mm-hmm. And then we turn around and say, we have no power over Israel. They're rogue actors.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Get out of here. That's the point. Trump calls Danny Allen and says, cut this shit out. He cuts the shit out. Will he do it? It's the question. And the answer is probably no.
Well, he would. Okay, so that's where if this all falls apart, it falls apart there. Right. Yeah. I mean, so then what happens? Again, that's when we get into Ted's late waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and just thinking about all this. And my mind races and I think Trump nukes Tehran.
I don't see it. I have a hard time seeing it. But maybe because it's so
big. Harry Truman nuked two Japanese cities, neither of which were civilian targets.
Yeah, but that's different.
Is it?
Like that's in this kind of major war where life just doesn't matter for most of the populations. Like meaning when you've wiped out millions of people in a conflict, it's like, okay, what's another 10, 15, 100,000, 2,000 more? Like, you know what I mean? Like the numbers start to get goofy at a certain point and the numbers make it seem less real. This would be a war regression out of the blue for the most part, where Trump nukes Iran.
Well, I agree. It's fucking insane. But we do a lot of look at starting this war was fucking insane in the first place. And the thing is, you know, once you unleash the dogs of war, you end up with an inherently unpredictable set of circumstances. But in some respects, they're very predictable. And like that we would end up here was kind of, you know, could have been foreseen easily.
Well, yeah, it was foreseen. Yes. Because at least for me, I didn't think that we had the capability. I thought it was insane attacking Iran. And I was like, but even like, it's the idea that we've been at war in Ukraine for what, 4 years? A major war. That's like one of those First World War type pitch battles that is effectively taking place in regards to two
trench warfare. Military.
Exactly. Where you're using huge amounts of munitions. You are scrounging around the world to try to find air defense missiles. Your capability of building those missiles are limited. And even the capability of the weapon systems that you have at your disposal are somewhat limited. You're not in a wartime economy. You're in a normal economy with a capitalist economy of that, where you have to buy that stuff, and that stuff is limited in regards to supplies. And then you say, screw it. Let's have another war. Meaning you don't have the capabilities that you're claiming that you have at your disposal, and yet you're still going to war with Iran. I had Colonel Wilkerson on the show. Wilkerson said, we will be defeated. He said it flat out. We were defeated. The war is not over. So don't get me wrong. I'm not being triumphant, but I am pointing out.
It's a zombie war. Yeah. It just goes
kind
on.
Of, yeah.
It's sort of like the Battle of New Orleans in the War of 1812. Like, why are we fighting this? I just didn't get the mail that it was over.
It's bizarre.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying nukes is big. Like, it's hard for me.
All right, I just want to get to some more questions. F.U. said, thanks for the dollar. This is a JT special here. Any new alien news and disclosures? Thoughts on new Disclosure Day Spielberg movie and the S4, the Bob Lazar story documentary?
Yeah, so Bob, okay, you say you didn't know who Bob Lazar was. Look up Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar is a fascinating case. Bob Lazar worked at S4. He put Roswell.
What's S4?
So S4 is the U.S. base that's in Roswell, New Mexico. It was a secret base. Nobody knew about it. And, well, it's a wing of the base. But nobody knew about Roswell as a U.S. installation, military installation. In fact, if you remember, they were burning chemicals out. And Bill Clinton was like, I can't acknowledge that that exists. But at a certain point, they did acknowledge it. Bob Lazar ended up being right that that base was there. They were testing... according to Bob Lazar, UFOs, that they were studying that stuff. And Bob Lazar was brought in to help with the investigation because they couldn't necessarily make any headway on the technology. It's like if you put a caveman, if you gave this caveman a cell phone and all the resources in the world, could he figure out what it is? Well, he doesn't even know about electronics. He doesn't even know, that these signals are flying in the air in regards to radio waves. So it's like, how do you figure out what the technology does if you don't even know the principles by which the technology works? And that's effectively what they were hitting ahead on, according to Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar is a weird case, but Bob Lazar has been consistent over the course of the 40, 50 years that he's been out. He comes out with a new movie that is given this kind of virtual representation of what it was like in S4, in that base, and as he was doing his work. So that's that movie. Bob Lazar is a fascinating case. I haven't seen Spielberg's story, but apparently there is a wink and a nod that has taken place with trying to get information out into the public in a way that doesn't freak out the public. And the belief is that media is a gateway of doing that. So there's a belief in the UFO community that movies like the Spielberg thing is a way of pushing this out to the audience in a way that is not necessarily disturbing to the audience. I mean, I think... I don't want to spend too much time on this because I know we have other questions. But I think the interesting thing in this is, what if the reason that they're being squirrely about the subject matter is because it's not good? Like I used to have the Space Brother idea, right? So like be staying on a building with Space Brother on my T-shirt, you know, saying welcome. And then I got more cynical. And I got into politics. And I started to think about this stuff a little bit. More hard-edged. What if the reporting is just not good? Like it's a black box and we don't know what's in that box. And the idea that people like Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Obama, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, that these are the people who are ferreting information to the public because they will be the gatekeepers to this black box. Like, hey, I know you don't know what's in this black box, but trust us. On this, we're being honest. And here's the information.
This one.
How the hell do you trust information coming from people like this in a government set up like this? It's hard, right? So, I don't know. Those things are fascinating. The subject matter is obviously fascinating, and I obviously keep my ear to the ground on it. But I haven't seen too much recently come out short of those movies.
All right. JT, you need a better mic. Great Mosses says from Canada, where they're he's donating $2. Him, though. It's picking up your train.
Speaking of my, oh yeah, I know, right? The train comes through pretty clear.
It's actually
cool. I will get a new one over the weekend.
All right, cool.
Again, this weekend was a soft launch. It was testing everything.
Yeah, the room's a little hot too, so maybe you need some kind of carpet or I don't know.
There's curtains. No way. This room is almost shaped like a church with this huge ceiling up top. I think the ceiling is like maybe two stories.
Oh, okay. High. So it's echoey.
Yeah, it's echoey.
Yeah, I mean, there's mics that will address that. Okay, this is a question for Robbie. Fellow Southerner here. How would you think, what makes you think Robbie's Southerner? Wanting to know where you're from, Robbie.
Southerner.
I'm from, I am originally from Pensacola, Florida. They're on the Redneck Riviera. Mm-hmm. And now I'm here in Montana since 2010.
All right. Thank you, Robbie.
I think I'm the Southerner here. I'm in Virginia. I was born and raised here, Richmond. Yes. Home of the Confederacy.
That's right. No, I mean, the destruction of Monument Boulevard was just a
pathetic.
It was it was terrible. You don't change minds by erasing history.
Agreed. You just reshape how you look at those figures. You don't have to take the figures down. It's still. Yeah. Exists.
You talk about
put it this way. If you go on my Instagram account, all of my exes are there. And then remove them. It's like
purge them.
Yeah, them from my pictures doesn't get rid of the history, right?
Yeah, it's a little weird. I mean, I've read in like advice columns where people are like, I'm in a second marriage with a dude. We're both in second marriages, and he still has a picture of his ex-wife up. He says he wants his kids to still see her. I want her gone. I'm like, why are you jealous of the person that he divorced? They got divorced. They're not together anymore.
Yep. I haven't removed any of them.
Anyway, weird. All right. Is Manchild, is Netanyahu sacrificing global stability for an October win banking on 77% approval for bombing Lebanon to drown out a world demanding peace? Is he holding the planet hostage for his survival? That last part for sure.
Yeah, he obviously wants to keep the war going. And I suspect he obviously has hitched his wagon to the U.S., believing that that's going to be enough to accomplish his objectives of this cutting greater Israel. I just think they're wrong.
Two quick stories, and we'll proceed with questions. Why did Melania find it necessary to call a press conference and say, you know, I never sucked Jeffrey Epstein's dick. I don't have anything to do. No, she didn't say that. But, you know, I didn't have any relationship, any friendship. I never visited the island. And no, Jeffrey didn't introduce the Donald to me. Why? What's she responding to?
That is a damn good question. I mean, there were reports. Okay, so to be fair to her, there were reports that came out that Melania was connected to Epstein in some way. Mm-hmm. This was a few days ago that came out, so maybe she's responding to that. You know, kind of like if like you have 1,000 comments, 999 are good. There's that one, you respond to that one that's
taking bugs you.
Yeah, it may be that, right? God, I can't believe they're connecting me to Epstein.
Isn't this a classic Streisand effect?
Yes. She should have just shut up about it. Just leave it, right?
Just shut up. Because now, like, Ted Rawls, like, huh? What's going on with Melania?
Why are you talking about Epstein? Yeah, you don't bring it up. You know, if somebody said so-and-so beats his wife, the moment that you amplify the fact that it's false on some level, well, I guess you have to knock that down.
It's rough. It's like when I was libeled by the LA Times, I literally thought, well, if I sue, it's going to attract more attention to their libel.
Right.
And that's true. It is true.
Yeah, it's that case.
On the other hand, you let it lie, so it's this horrible, you have to balance like two terrible possibilities.
Yeah, but you don't amplify stuff that may not be big. And if you're the wife of the president of the U.S., anything that you talk about amplifies it.
Especially because she's not a very public first lady.
Exactly. Just leave it. Let your movie talk for you.
Okay, so, and I also want to talk about Signal. Do you use Signal?
Yes.
Okay, so I do too. And I was always impressed by the fact that all journalists use it. I mean, I've gone to cyber safety conferences here in New York for journalists, and they're like, first thing you do, like this was years ago, download Signal. Only talk to your sources using Signal, right? And it's point to, I use it with my friends. It's point to point, end to end encryption. And thank you. And Edward Snowden personally recommended it. I would say he's in a good position to know about these things. So yes. It turns out that there's a recent trial. I won't get into the details of the trial because it's not really important to this conversation. But the FBI was managed to get a defendant's iPhone. The user had already deleted the app completely, and the user the settings for it were for the messages to disappear immediately upon being read, and yet the FBI retrieved all of the incoming messages on Signal. How did they do it? Care to guess?
One of two ways. I know on computers, when you delete something, it doesn't really delete it. It just makes the memory available for usage.
That's true. That's not what it was here, though, where basically like on a computer, if something's deleted, it's just marked with a tag that says deleted, exactly. but it's still there.
Right. So, okay. So I'm not sure. I mean, if it's not saved to the phone, unless...
I'll give you another hint. It's not the cloud either.
Unless they had access to the phone in and of itself. I know
they had the phone. They had the phone, and that's the key here. They had the phone. Yeah. But the app's gone. The messages were set to disappear. All right, so I found this fascinating. So the person had push notifications for their Signal, when their Signal was active. So it turns out that the Apple iPhone stores all, and this is probably true on Android too, saves all of your push notifications. Like you got a message, Ted Rawl says hi. So that notification is stored in a push notification database on your phone.
Right. The data saved on the phone.
So they went and looked at all the push notifications and read the messages. So the message here from Ted Rawl, your today's privacy expert tip before the weekend is, if you care about this, deactivate your push notifications. You can have it set, for example, just to show that you have a message, or you can have it set to say, oh, you got a message from Ted, but it doesn't say what Ted had to say. Or you can have the whole thing up there, but then they can read everything. Or you can have no notifications for all at all, and you can just go check to see if you have anything on Signal. But that last way is the way to go.
Are the push notifications encrypted?
They're not.
What?
So turn off your fucking push notifications.
So if it says something like, from mistress, ball gagging an ass today, that shows up.
that's exactly right. And we got a minute left. So let's race through some comments. So now you know, don't say I'm useless. CIA Vault 7 WikiLeaks discredited Signal, it says DC8828. Thanks very much for that donation. May Bleth, thanks for the $10. Long-term lurker, first-time Rumble user, wanted to support after John's exit. Also, long-time Jamal fan, and I'm so thrilled to see him on the show and recovered. Love you guys together. And Robbie, so nice. And let's see, and just one more round here. PW Walker, thanks for the dono. You can hear Bibi and Miriam screaming at Trump right now to use nukes in Iran. Agreed. And not to mention Hegseth and Levin and Fox News. Yeah, all true. That's a show. That's a week. Thanks for an awesome first week. Looking forward to many more. We will be back next week, Monday through Friday. 9 a.m. Eastern time here on Deprogram with Ted Rawl and Jamal Thomas. Please stay tuned for the TMI show with Ted Rawl and Manila Chan coming up right now. Bye all. Bye Robbie. See you. Well, I'll see Robbie in like a minute.
Have a good one, guys.